Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we are delighted to have with us to begin this hour the editor of Vanity Fair magazine, Graydon Carter. He has a new book that's a collection of the magazine's popular and thought-provoking Proust questionnaire series, in which they ask cultural icons a set of questions that the novelist Marcel Proust famously answered back in, I think, the 1880s and 1890s. They have learned, for example, that Ted Kennedy thinks he would have beaten Ronald Reagan in 1980. Walter Cronkite would like to be reincarnated as a seagull. And Arnold Schwarzenegger called himself a major shoe queen. And we'll also talk about the future of media with Graydon Carter, who founded Spy Magazine with Kurt Anderson back in the 80s, is a Peabody Award-winning documentary filmmaker, and even owns a couple of Manhattan restaurants. The book is called Vanity Fair's Proust Questionnaire, published by Rodale. And Graydon, thanks so much for coming on. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks, Brian.
Give our listeners the background on the Proust questionnaire. What was it for Proust, and how did it become a 16-year fixture in Vanity Fair?
Well, it was a parlor game started by the daughter of a French president back in the 19th century. Marcel Proust picked it up and started doing this with his friends in the evenings. And it took off, certainly in France, probably had a long dormant period until 1992, when we decided to put it into the magazine. It was the idea of my London editor, Henry Porter, who had used something like this in one of the rotogravure magazines he had produced for one of the London newspapers. And it's run on every back page of the magazine since.
We're going to give our listeners a chance at a few of these questions in a minute. So listeners, get ready if you dare to play this parlor game. It's really more than a game because it's very, very thought-provoking. But do you ask the exact same questions every month?
Yeah, we have a shopping list and of questions. There are about 25 or 30. And Proust always thought that if you could almost tell everything you need to know about a person by the way they answered these questions.
So for our listeners, before we go through some examples of how other people have answered over the years and what's in the book, Graydon, we thought we would let you determine which questions our listeners will respond to for the next few minutes. Do you have two or three favorite questions from the questionnaire?
I think you get great responses from the question, what is the quality you most like in a man, and what is the quality you most like in a woman? Fran Lebowitz, for instance, the quality she most wanted in a man was height, and the quality she most liked in a woman was depth. And these are quite telling, usually.
Height and depth. I noticed that Proust's own answers to those questions, or some questions like them, changed from when he first did it when he was a teenager to when he second time he did it when he was about 20. This is in your book, right? And it looked to me like his gender awareness really evolved over those few years.
It's probably a difficult period in history for gender awareness to evolve. So
I guess
probably
so.
Did it delicately.
We're talking about 1880s, 1890s, because before I realized he was a teenager when he was filling these out, I was reading the responses and I think, God, this guy is really sexist. He wants women to just be. Do you remember this answer? He said he wants smart women to act like they're not so smart,
right,
or something to that effect.
Right.
And then by the time he was in his 20s, he was saying his favorite quality in a man was if they displayed feminine traits.
Right.
Feminine charm.
Right.
And in a woman was if they had something like a man.
Yes. Well, there's somebody else has answered the question like that. It was Gore Vidal. The trait he most looked for in a woman was manliness, and the trait he most looked for in a man was womanliness. So, and I think that Proust, I think that his reaction towards women in the early stages was probably more theoretical than based on empirical knowledge.
And, you know, everybody's going to call up and say, well, no, they should be the exact same traits.
A lot of people answered with exactly the same traits.
With exactly the
same
traits.
Humor or loyalty.
So let's throw in a few other options for you. If you want to call up and do a little Proust questionnaire session with Graydon Carter, One that you said that you really like when we were talking to you off the air was, how would you like to die?
Mm-hmm.
That's challenging. And who's the person you most admire? And what's the trait you most deplore in others? So how about any of those for you listeners? How would you like to die? Who's the person you most admire? What's the trait you most deplore in others? Or the quality you most admire in a man and quality you most admire in a woman? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And you have a Facebook app for this, too, I gather, where anyone can do it?
Yeah, they go online through vanityfair.com, and they fill out the forms, and then the program will tell you who you're most like in the book.
And so Barbara in Park Slope already did this and got an interesting match. Barbara, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. I did this last week. I came up with a match for Joan Didion at something like 95%. The only Joan Didion I've ever read was Play It As It Lays, and it got me so depressed I felt like almost suicidal. And since then, which is maybe 15 years ago, I've tried to avoid Joan Didion. And the fact that I would have such a high match with her is a little creepy for me.
Barbara, what were some of your answers that made you so close?
I don't remember.
You don't remember?
This is so upsetting that I've tried to sort of put it out of my mind.
What, is there something about Joan Didion that you just don't want to be associated with?
Because I think, again, the first and only Didion I've read was a book that made me so profoundly sad. And I don't want to be that person.
I see. Barbara, thank you for your call. Joan Didion, here's one example I noticed from the book. Joan Didion was asked where and when she was the happiest, and referred to eating lunch by herself in a hotel room in Chicago with snow drifting on the window ledges. Does that reflect sadness? I wonder how many people have had their happiest moments being alone.
It sounds quite wonderful. I mean, and actually that was based on a character in her novel. And as she says, the characters don't come from nothing. I thought Joan actually had one of the more beautiful set of answers. They were quite long and very poetic.
And that could be a whole follow-up segment one day. I wonder how many people have had their happiest moments being alone.
That's true.
And so maybe we'll tackle that on another occasion. Graydon Carter, my guest on WNYC, editor of Vanity Fair magazine, a collection now of their Proust questionnaires out in book form. And Beatrice in Rockland County, you're on WNYC. Hi, Beatrice.
Hello.
And you called to answer which question?
About how I would want to die.
And that is?
And that is sometime maybe in my 80s or whatever age I start to fail my mind, although that seems like I'm doing it right now.
Right
but anyway,
now. You are. It's over for you, Beatrice.
It's over for me right now. No, but when I really start to lose it, it would be great to just have a very clean, sudden heart attack and then have my family come around and have a huge celebration of my life and of their lives with me and have great food, great music, and then cremate me and scatter my ashes somewhere.
So you program not only your own death, but what happens after your own death.
After, yeah. I can even make up my menu or something.
Beatrice, thank you very much. And Graydon, I mean, I guess that's the common way that people want to die. They want to live until they're very old and have a heart attack in 30 seconds and boom.
And surrounded by loving people and mourned by millions.
So what kind of creative and different answers do you get to that question?
Well, a lot of people want to be surrounded by their children. Everybody wants to die, you know, in bed. I mean, nobody wants to die in a car crash, obviously. And, I mean, that is probably the most commonly the answer where most people come closer to being similar. There's one here, Hugh Hefner, and this was answered in September 2000. What are your favorite names? And it's Brandy, Sandy, and Mandy. Now, since that was 9 years ago, you're sure there's probably a whole new cast of characters there, a different set of favorite names.
You've written that the questionnaire produces a staggering level of honesty, particularly among Hollywood mandarins. You want to give me a few more favorite examples
of
that?
Well, I just remember that Jane Fonda, one of her deepest regrets in life was that she was never able to have a sort of long-term stable relationship. Hers were very, you know, sincere and quite sort of forthcoming. People like Arnold Schwarzenegger, his were so funny. I mean, I thought he's one of the best people we've ever had on this. He said, "What is the trait you most deplore in others?" And it's people who speak with heavy American accents. I says, "I can barely understand them." No, seriously, dishonesty. And his motto is, "If at first you don't succeed, try again, then use a stunt double." He's very disarming and self-deprecating, even in like language, in language and letters as well. I think this is who he is.
Ted Kennedy told you he would have won in 1980 if he got the nomination to run against Ronald Reagan. I've never seen him say that anywhere else.
Nor have I. This went to press just before he died, there was a question there about what do you regard as the lowest depth of misery? I mean, suddenly losing a loved one. But his favorite occupation was being a U.S. senator, so I think he had that.
Danny in Princeton is calling to answer the question, what he admires most in a man. Danny, you're on WN. Oh, which man you most admire? Is that it, Danny?
Yes, hi. It's both. The trait would be being able to spot nonsense and falsehoods, and that would be James Randi, who runs the James Randi Educational Foundation. He's the one that started the modern-day skeptical movement. He can pretty much spot fraud in an instant,
okay,
whether it be medical fraud, psychic fraud, you name it.
Thank you.
Debunking it.
Well, that's
years.
The amazing Randi.
Yes, it is, James. The amazing Randi.
Okay, yeah.
Ah, you heard of him.
Danny, thank you very much. Are there some most common answers you get to that question of what people most admire in a man?
They like, sense of humor, loyalty. I mean, they're obvious answers because it is what you want in a man or a woman. Honesty, sense of humor, loyalty.
So some of the most unusual or memorable?
Well, as I say, Franz was very good. Like, I'll read Barbara Walters. What is the quality you most like in a man? She does say sense of humor, but also a private plane. And the quality that you most like in a woman, a sense of humor and a private plane. So a lot of people use that as a way to sort of have a joke rhythm to answer.
Joe in Chinatown on the trait that he most deplores. Joe, you're on WNYC.
Good morning, Brian. I deplore people who love to talk about themselves and be boastful.
And you're really great at debunking boastfulness, aren't you?
I am as self-deprecating as Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Joe, thank you very much. How about that most deplored trait, Graydon? Do things ring the charts there?
Of what?
Well, that's one of the questions, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it usually involves other people. Some people are quite honest about themselves, and they say they're chronically late. I think Martin Short had something. I'm trying to see where Martin Short's is. Martin Short's was very good, as most of the comedians were. I mean, one of his things was, how would you like to die? And he just says, naked and bloated. And what was his current state of mind? Is that with the prescription? But I'm trying to find where his he didn't answer that question.
He didn't.
Some of them don't answer all the questions.
I did notice, though, that the comedian David Steinberg answered the question on the trait he most deplores in others as outing a CIA agent because you're peeved about something else.
Yeah. Well, you can tell what year that was done in.
I guess. Steve in Greenwood Lake, you're on WNYC. Hi, Steve.
Hey, good morning. I guess my favorite trait in a man would be sanity, and my most admired sane man was Kurt Vonnegut Jr.
Thank you very much. Sanity's a good one. So is this emblematic of what you're trying to do with Vanity Fair these days? It's on the one level a cheeky celebrity magazine, and on the other a vehicle for serious journalism and reflection?
Yeah, I mean, David Carr in the New York Times said it was a magazine that was edited for two sides of the brain. And I think that, you know, these are very serious, troubling times. And I think a magazine, if it's going to succeed, has to reflect those times. At the same point, there are stories that you want that just sort of will lift the human spirit or make you laugh or make you cry.
My guest on WNYC, Graydon Carter, the editor of Vanity Fair, new book collecting some of their Vanity Fair's Proust questionnaires, which appears each issue at the back of the book, with celebrity icons answering the question. And, you know, Vanity Fair still seems like 1,000 pages a month, most of it advertising.
Oh, I wish, Brian.
Even as the magazine industry as a whole seems to be in death throes of its own. How's Vanity Fair doing?
Well, we have a unique position in that we it's a monthly magazine that goes around the world in one form, and we tell long stories by great journalists with great photography. And so far, that cannot be duplicated on the Internet. I think that our advertising is down this year, but our newsstand sales are stronger than ever. We have the highest circulation we've ever had. I think it's tougher on weekly magazines because they're competing with daily newspapers and the Internet. And newspapers, obviously, they're competing directly with the Internet. So we're not about the immediate information. We're about the stepping back a bit and telling the longer story.
Is the magazine industry doomed?
No, I think a magazine actually is quite a brilliant invention. It's they're quite inexpensive. They're highly portable, no batteries. If you lose it, you can buy another one almost anywhere. You can give it to a friend afterwards or recycle it.
They're not as portable as a smartphone.
They're not as portable as a smartphone, but they're less complicated to maneuver.
Is the holy grail of media right now finding ways to monetize content online?
Yeah, I think that, you know, there'll be machines invented, in the next year or two that will make it reading a magazine as pleasurable experience as actually reading a magazine now. But that won't change the need for people who tell stories and take pictures.
Because what? Because the pictures aren't going to translate on those little
smartphones? They will, but you need the people to actually take the pictures first, whether it's in war-torn zones or great portraits of people in the culture.
It's real cognitive dissonance, I think, for many people who care about real journalism. We want to think that the progressive stance toward the Internet is that everything should be free. And just a few years ago, people were outraged when the New York Times, for example, started Time Select and made people pay to read the popular columnists. On the other hand, if news organizations don't start charging for their content, real journalism may shrivel to a pea. Are you caught between those poles?
Well, I think that, you could have citizen dentists and citizen doctors, but I think you'd prefer professionals handling your body and teeth. The fact is that journalists do something. I mean, journalism is a expensive, time-consuming business, and it's not going to be done by somebody sitting at home in their pajamas. That is opinion or a commentary. But journalism is a lot of work.
How do you pick your spots in Vanity Fair for money-losing investigative reporting?
Well, if I think it can make a difference, we have two of the greatest investigative reporters, Bartlett and Steele, who won two Pulitzer Prizes. And they do like two stories a year because they take 6 months each. These guys are in their late 60s. And if it's a matter of public concern, that's the sort of thing we go after.
What's your relationship with celebrity? We laugh at it. We scoff at it. It's a way that the Republicans mock Barack Obama, for being a celebrity. Yet you traffic in it. What's your relationship with celebrity?
Well, it's sort of slightly guarded. I mean, we only do one sort of movie star a month, and we put movie stars on the cover because this is a global magazine, and they are the international cultural currency. I mean, each country has its own music stars or sports stars, but movie stars tend to be much more universal. I think that it's, I'm from Canada, where it's far less prevalent there. It's very much an American thing, although if you go to Italy, they're obsessed with the notion of celebrity as well. I think the bar of what it takes to be famous has gone down precipitously. In the old days, you had to be like Yehudi Menuhin or Marlon Brando. Now you can be
John and Kate,
or Paris Hilton, or not even that. I mean, they're like Yehudi Menuhin compared to some of the others. So it's the bar is so low. I do think it's a phase. I think America tends to swing one way and then much further than most countries, and swing back the other way, also much further than most countries. And we will swing back closer to something else. I don't know what it is.
With that international perspective, do you think Americans have a different relationship with celebrity than people in other countries? Does it mean something different to us?
Our celebrities are different. I mean, in Britain, footballers are about the biggest stars you can find, and footballers' wives are almost there. In Italy, I mean, if you pick up an Italian magazine, we think of them as all sort of eating wonderful, drinking wonderful wine and living in Tuscany and living in, and sort of walking the streets of Rome. Their magazines are all filled with topless women you've never heard of, and they're, you know, their television is just as bad. So it takes different forms in each country. And you know, the United States version of this is not worse. It's just different and bigger.
So before you go, what's the trait that you most deplore in others?
Well, I do love people being on time because I'm very punctual, and it's a minor sort of quibble, but I think it helps keep the wheels of social interaction moving. And it means if you arrive on time, you don't have to start off by saying, I'm sorry.
And what do you most admire in a woman?
Oh, I have a sense of humor and loyalty and very unimaginative, and the same thing in a man.
Same thing in a man. And how would you like to die?
Mourned by millions, the teardrops of thousands on my coffin.
Oh, come on, that's after you die.
Yeah. I would like to die quietly in my sleep, surrounded by my family.
Me too, in my sleep. Okay. That's the important part. The book is called Vanity Fair's Proust Questionnaire, published by Rodale. It's collected answers to the Proust Questionnaire feature in Vanity Fair. And again, where can people go to do this themselves and see who's a cultural icon, who they most match up with?
If you go on vf.com, it's a very easy program to fill out the questions, and then the program will compare you to who's in the book.
Nice to have you. Graydon Carter.
Thanks so much, Brian.
Brian Lehrer, WNYC. Coming up in a minute, human rights activists from Russia and Ethiopia compare notes in our studio. I don't think I'm going to ask them their most admired trait in a man. Stay with us.